This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works without adverse side effects. Get free shipping on all of your orders at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. I'm with Layla Mutin, who is our nutritionist in residence. And this is a banner occasion because we are actually in the same space. We, you know, communicated virtually for the past 3 months during lockdown. And here we are once again in the office seeing patients. You know, it's kind of a little bit of normalcy.
Yeah, it feels good. Mm-hmm. It feels good to be back.
It's good to be back. Mm-hmm. You know, we're observing precautions. We're wearing masks. We're taking the temperature of patients when they come into the office. We're limiting the number of patients who can be in the office at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I got a dive watch prior to a dive trip that I took this spring, and I wanted to
scuba diving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it's a really nice dive watch. It works really well, but I noticed that it runs a little slow. So I'm taking advantage of the fact that stores are open again here in Manhattan. So I. Uh-huh. So I, on the way to work, there's a watch store for, you know, the it's a Seiko watch. So it's a little Seiko watch store on Madison Avenue. It's open again. And so I go there and, you know, and I pull on the door handle and they're inside, but I can't get in. And the guy goes, he points. He points, you know, like I should read something. So I see there's a bunch of signs on the door, you know, like wear a mask, you know, with precautions. And it says, the limit of number of people in the store is 2. Mm. And there's a couple in the store looking at watches.
Oh.
And it's like, it's an inky-dinky store. It's just like one of those little...
little hole-in-the-wall.
Hole-in-the-wall stores. And so, you know, so I can't go into the store.
Yeah.
Because there's 2 other people in the store.
Oh, golly.
So, you know, I'll have to go buy another...
Or that's go to not a bigger store.
That's not great for the watch business. You could take care of 2 people at a time. So there are limits to, you know, the recovery here in New York. It's nice to be back, and we're seeing patients with precautions. But kudos to the patients who, you know, really takes courage now to come to the doctor's office. You know, you've got to go sometimes on public transportation.
Sure.
With the subways
or
the buses.
Which has never been cleaner, by the way.
Oh, it's spanking clean. It's like you could eat off the seats, you know.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's called the hygiene hypothesis,
right.
You know, and what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
That's it.
Right. But anyway, so I was talking to one of the other doctors here, and he says, I've been doing telemedicine. He says, well, unfortunately, I can't do much telemedicine because his thing is very procedure-oriented. He does, like, injections of various kinds, you know. And
can't do that virtually.
No. So he says what people are scared to come to the office. So he's, like, now he's doing house calls. He goes.
Oh,
he
nice.
Charges extra. But he does
travel time.
He does like Botox on people, and they pay extra money so that they can come and have it done in the safety of their own apartment without even having to
look at
venture
that.
Into the mean streets of New York.
Right, right. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
That's serendipitous.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean,
to some degree.
It's what's, it's an adaptation to new circumstances. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the doctors are trying to keep active and they're doing whatever they can to keep their practices going. I'm glad to see that they're, you know, just like the intrepid restaurateurs of New York, they're coming up with ways to continue to treat their patients. I, however, don't get excited. I don't make house calls yet.
Me either.
I think, yeah, it's, you know, telemedicine is fine. You know, people want to consult with us online, you know, that's fine. It's just that
Zoom and stuff.
They can start with you online. Mm-hmm. You can, I think you start with a patient from Florida today, right?
Or
you're
tomorrow.
You're getting her. But you see, there is a rule in New York City, in New York State, that in order to initiate a medical interaction with a patient, you must see the patient and do a physical exam and have hands-on so that you can't, you know, it's not, you know, it's, look, remote medicine is great for certain things, and I think it's great for nutrition, but, you know, really, when you see a patient, you take full responsibility for the patient. You should examine them, like, you know, occasionally you'll find something like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, your heart has skipped beats, you need to get that checked out, or like, what's that lump under your arm, or, you know, you could find something, and so you, as a doctor, you take responsibility. You, as a nutritionist, you know,
phone consults.
You're confined to their nutritional status. You don't take full responsibility for their overall health. You make sure that they have a doctor.
Yes.
And so,
and updated
that they're
tests
under medical care. Yeah. So it works, and you know, we're doing you know what we can, and you know, this hopeful the situation will blow over. You know, we will get some questions about COVID-19. That's inevitable. But let's take a little segue before we get to questions. Headline: people with high cholesterol should eliminate carbs, not saturated fat, study suggests. See, things are turning around. How many years ago was it that you worked with Dr. Atkins?
Oh, 2003. Yeah.
So, you know, we're almost 20 years hence, and in a lot of ways he's being vindicated. A new study published in the journal BMJ, Evidence-Based Medicine, that's used to stand for British Medical Journal, found no evidence to support the claim that people with familial hypercholesterolemia, that is a familial susceptibility to, you know, they have cholesterol 350 or 400.
Yeah.
They've been instructed to minimize their consumption of saturated fats to lower cholesterol and reduce their risk of heart disease, but a new study pushes back on that assertion. They may have cholesterol levels 2 to 4 times higher than the average person. So they could have cholesterol 400, 600, I've seen. Organizations, including the American Heart Association, suggest that they avoid eating food from animal sources such as meat, eggs, and cheese, and to avoid coconut oil. God forbid, coconut oil. I have that almost every day. I love it on my fruit, you know, as a little snack. I don't get as much sugar, and I get some fat to slow the curve of the sugar absorption from the blueberries that I mean.
Yeah,
raspberries or blackberries. It's a favorite dessert of mine. I sprinkle some flaxseed on top, or maybe crush some almonds on top.
Very nice.
But this is by our good colleague, Dr. David Diamond, who is also goes by the moniker LDL Skeptic on Twitter. He has a Twitter handle, LDL Skeptic.
Good.
And his co-authors say following a low-carb diet is most effective for people at risk of heart disease, such as those who are overweight, hypertensive, and diabetic. But not just the pre-diabetic folks, though, even the folks with familial hypercholesterolemia. Strong evidence that food raises blood sugar, such as bread, potatoes, and sweets, should be minimized. And we saw such a patient today, you know, a patient who's a quasi-vegetarian, but having too much starch.
Yeah.
And and has a high blood sugar.
Right, right.
Wants to lose weight, needs to lose weight, going to have an operation. So as a prelude to the operation, they actually kind of made a deal with her and said, you need to lose some weight before your operation will be more successful if we get you to lose some weight.
Yeah, and if she follows a low-carb diet, she'll be able to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I told her she came to the right place.
Absolutely.
And then she saw me, she saw you. That, I think, is, and we're seeing more and more studies like this just last week, as you know, we may have reported here on this Q&A with Layla podcast. It was a study that overturned the notion that saturated fat is a culprit in cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I posted that, and some people, including medical people, commented, they're astonished. Like, how could that be? How could that be? They're so thoroughly indoctrinated, you know?
With that cardiac prudent diet in the hospitals.
Yeah.
Still, I suppose.
Well, too bad. You know, Mark Hyman, for some reason, he was in the hospital. I think he was having a back procedure or something, and he just took a picture of what they put on his tray. Now, this is a guy you don't want to diss. He's like the preeminent integrative doctor. And so they give him the routine thing. You know, they give him like all kinds of horrendous carby junk, you know, toast and, yogurt.
Cereal with skim milk.
Low-fat yogurt sweetened with, you know, whatever.
Jam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know.
Unbelievable. Juice.
Juice, a nice container of orange juice.
Yeah, or cranberry juice.
Highly sweetened, mm-hmm. or which isn't even really juice.
Right, it's sort it's of a juice drink.
Juice drink, you know, and it, you know, this is what we're up against. I mean, yeah.
And if you don't eat that, they'll give you a couple of cans of Ensure.
Oh, that's what happened when I was in the hospital. It's like,
yeah.
I had like a pyramid of it. I couldn't see the TV. I broke my leg, and I was in a position where I couldn't see the TV. It was like, I said, I need to see the dietitian immediately. She came eagerly because she was thinking, like, I said,
yay, somebody wants to see
me. Somebody wants to see me. I said, could you please get this big pyramid of Ensure off my table? I can't see my TV. And she, you know, she timidly slunk away, you know, like.
You could have sold that on the street.
Yeah.
Ensure.
Get your Ensure.
That and Lucerna. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, anyway. They said, you know, this was like nutrition.
Yeah.
And it's like, unfortunately, and what I did at the time is I got, you know, family members to come in and bring me actual food.
Oh, yeah.
From the outside.
Before you starve to death from all that, what?
Yeah.
What do you want me to eat?
Mystery meat and
exactly
mashed potatoes with gravy or whatever it was. Okay. So, anyway, let us get to questions.
Yeah. We've got an email from Jean. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. This item popped on my Facebook feed, and even though many of us are sick of COVID news, found it interesting. I never knew vaccines can train the immune cells this way. What is your take on it? The MMR vaccine, that's the measles, mumps, and rubella virus vaccine, may provide protection against COVID-19 complications. It finds that the vaccine can help protect against severe inflammation and infections tied to COVID-19. It can help to train your cells, fight off other diseases too, because vaccines train leukocytes,
mm-hmm.
the body's immune right. cells, to be more effective.
Okay. So, all right, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
But it sort of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What I had heard, and I actually included this in my article in the newsletter this week. If you haven't yet already subscribed to our newsletter, go to drhoffman.com and just put in your email. And, you know, we won't bombard you with crazy ads or put you on mailing lists that we sell or anything, just so we can communicate with you and send our newsletter directly to you. In there, I talk about vaccines. I talk about the fact that it is thought that the BCG vaccine, which is the tuberculosis, there's no vaccine for tuberculosis, and tuberculosis remains a scourge, but the BCG is a very old vaccine. It stands for Bacterium Calmette Guérin, which is it's something similar to TB. I think it's some mycobacteria that they use and denature, and then they put it under your skin. They sort of scrape it under your skin. It's not injected. It's more like a skin pop.
Uh-huh.
And it creates a little reaction. And it's not used anymore in, North America and in Europe. A, because it's not that effective, and B, because tuberculosis is no longer such a scourge here. By the way, tuberculosis was a huge scourge in the 19th century. I mean, you read so many romantic novels about, Thomas Mann and, the French novels, they died of consumption. who was the Doc Holliday, you know, portrayed in so many movies, you know, like in the OK Corral and Wyatt Earp. Doc Holliday is always like coughing, you know, and there's like a bloody handkerchief. And he suffered consumption. He was a dentist. He had, you know, I guess he got too close to the patients. there wasn't social distancing, and they didn't use masks. Anyway, so the point is that is thought to confer protection. And why was it thought to confer protection? Well, at first it was thought that there's this paradox. Like, we didn't see that many cases in countries that have kind of not good medical systems and have a lot of poverty, like India and in Latin America and Brazil. Mm-hmm. And they use that TB vaccine somewhat routinely there. But it was just a matter of time. Those countries have been hard hit.
Yeah.
And not as hard hit as we might expect, because the population is over 1 billion in India and they have less cases than the United States, but they're catching up. Mm. So then they did an Israeli study with the BCG vaccine, because some of the populace there has come from other countries where BCG was routinely administered, and those people did not experience more protection against COVID-19. Oh. So BCG kind of fell by the wayside. It was touted for, you know, a few weeks there. The other one that was touted was, and this came up recently, is the oral polio vaccine. It's the Sabin vaccine, as opposed to the Salk vaccine, is the shot.
Yeah.
Sabin vaccine is the oral polio. For some reason, the oral polio seems to stimulate the immune system in a better way. Now, what gave it more mojo is that Robert Gallo, who is the co-discoverer of the AIDS virus, gave this theory credence. However, it's more of a hypothetical paper. It's not even clinically trialed.
Okay.
So it's very preliminary that this could be helpful. And the other thing about it is there's a tendency for Nobel Prize winners and very, very outstanding scientists to become a little wackadoodle later in their career. Like Luc Montagnier, who's with Gallo, was the discoverer of the HIV virus, has recently opined that this is a bioengineered, it's a bioweapon, the COVID-19 is a bioweapon, that it has similarities to the AIDS virus, and he should know because he's the discoverer of the AIDS virus. But that was in 1983, and now we're dealing, 40 years later, it's not clear that he is at the top of his game in terms of virology, and, these guys, we're talking guys who are probably, you know, I would imagine at the very least in their 70s and maybe in their 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it sort of lends prestige that Gallo supports this theory about the oral polio vaccine, but I don't know necessarily if that's going to pan out. But coming back to this proposition, any vaccine stimulates the immune system.
Right. This particular mechanism of action, it says these newly trained defenders, when you get the NMR vaccine, they're called myeloid-derived suppressor cells, are believed to protect against septic inflammation and death in COVID-19 patients.
Okay.
Severe lung inflammation and sepsis have been tied to many fatal cases. They're doing clinical trials, and they don't think it'll hurt anyone. Sure. To have an MMR.
So here's a little factoid.
Hmm.
Who gets MMRs and who has kids?
Yeah.
Kids have had tremendously good outcomes with COVID-19.
Yes.
The vast majority are asymptomatic.
Right.
They're very, 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 very tiny fraction gets sick.
Mm-hmm.
There have been some deaths, but I saw something that they looked at, like, I think 31,000 kids. 7 died.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they may have had underlying conditions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, is it possible? Yes. Now, here's the other flip side of that. Anything that stimulates the immune system for good could also stimulate the immune system for not good.
Yeah.
So that we can see, autoimmune conditions and immunological reactions from vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have to, look, we have this dichotomy. Vaccines are great, or vaccines are terrible.
Hmm.
I think we need to be more nuanced in our thinking about it, is that maybe research needs to continue to look at maybe who should be, where we should be cautious about administering vaccines, because some people have immune systems that are maybe susceptible to autoimmunity, or people perhaps with autoimmune conditions might, I'm not saying they should, I'm just saying maybe we should be selective about when and to whom we give this vast number of vaccines to. That's also the problem with the COVID-19 proposed vaccine. They're calling it Operation Warp Speed. Now, I like Warp Speed, but when it comes to some vaccine I'm getting, that scares me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, or Moonshot. You know, it's like...
So better thoroughly
vetted.
Test that.
Right.
Before...
Yeah. So anyway, the point being, now, does this argue for, like, the way we're going to stop the COVID-19 pandemic is by giving everybody an MMR booster? I don't know. But there's a lot of papers out there about possible treatments. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems is that they've relaxed the editorial standards on publication of these lot of things, because it's an urgent problem. And it's like, hurry up and get this, you know, into print so that we can... debate it and discuss it.
It's almost like everybody brainstorm.
Right.
We'll talk about it.
But, hopefully. You know, we see this with the hydroxychloroquine, you know, Plaquenil. Study says it's great. Study says it's no good. It's harmful. New studies are saying maybe it's not so bad. Maybe it is helpful. Even for something as straightforward a proposition as that, there's controversy.
Yeah.
So, and then add to it a political dimension, because Trump advocated
it. Oh, boy, and that's when everything goes awry,
Trump advocated it. It's almost like...
He took it.
They actually did a poll. They said, if you're a Republican, you are far more likely to accept hydroxychloroquine than if you're a Democrat. Does that make sense? I mean, we should be, you know, we should be scientific about it.
Absolutely.
You know? And absolutely. Not, you know, place our bodies in hock to political ideologies. It either is helpful or not helpful, dangerous or not dangerous. Maybe there's a stage at which it's appropriate early on, probably more so than later. And the other thing is, some trials did not use zinc, which seems to be an important cofactor for the efficacy of hydroxychloroquine. Mm-hmm. I talked to a doctor who's on the front lines the other day. He had Dr. Salas Rush. I call him Rushmore, but I think it's Rushton. It's one of those hyphenated names. And it's one of our podcasts. And he said he's, you know, they threw everything at the patients in the early days. And hydroxychloroquine, he thinks, was generally helpful, although he can't swear to it because... Yeah. You know, when you give something to somebody and they get better, it's like, maybe they were going to get better anyway.
Right. You have to take that into consideration too, right?
As long maybe as it ran happened. Its course, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So we have an email from Shazad.
Okay.
My question for Dr. Hoffman is, shouldn't we use convalescent plasma at an earlier stage before it is being used, like, you know, after Actemra doesn't work, or the patient is on a ventilator?
Actemra is actually an immunosuppressant medication that's used for arthritis.
Yeah.
Rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, you know, we talk about, oh, these supplements will boost your immunity. At a certain phase in this, you may actually want to tamp down the immunity, because it's immunity gone awry in cytokine storms. So, Actemra is, and by the way, there was a study, I think, recently either on Actemra, one of those related medications, that said it wasn't that helpful. You know, it was early on, it seemed to make sense, and there were some preliminary, again, it was like, we gave it to the patients and they survived. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, is that proof positive? It's sort of like,
did it work or
didn't
it?
You know, it's sort of like, you know, I wrap my socks in, you know, garlic, and, you know, I wore them overnight. And next morning I woke up, I felt fine.
But my spouse ran away.
They'll deal with that later.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, we're gonna need to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. Time flies when we're having fun.
Oh my goodness.
And we are having fun answering your questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. And so actually, I didn't really, before we rushed to get to a break, let's talk about that convalescent plasma thing.
Yeah.
Convalescent plasma is a simple treatment that they're recruiting a lot of people for who've been sick. If you have antibodies at a certain level, high levels of antibodies, you can donate blood, which they then filter to hyper-concentrate the antibodies. Mm-hmm. And then they can, it's plasma, it's not blood cells. It's more like the chicken soup in which the blood cells float.
Yeah.
And it's a gamish. It's sort of like, a mixture of humors that your body manufactures in response to an infection. And they're going to give it to people. It's a simple treatment. It doesn't involve patenting a new drug.
Yeah.
And so far, the results are encouraging, but not definitive.
Mm-hmm.
And, I like it. I kind of like it. I like the simplicity of it. I like the naturalness of it. It's like transferring the immunity from one person who successfully fought the infection to another and to, support their own response.
In a definitive way.
We'll have to see, I think ultimately it's going to fall by the wayside because the economics are not,
there's not a whole lot of profit to be made from that.
You can't patent it.
Right.
You can patent a process by which you refine it.
Yeah.
And, but it, what they're really looking for is like very laser-like, medications or monoclonal antibodies that, frankly, have a lot of monetary potential.
Yeah.
And, and we hope that they are better than good old-fashioned convalescent plasma.
Sure.
Sure.
Wipe it out. Shahzad, thank you for that question.
Just look at it. Look at the domain name of his email to see if it's from a foreign country. I'm wondering where he's from because it's a foreign name. But
nope. It's a Gmail account.
A Gmail. Well, Gmail could be international.
Could be anywhere.
Yeah. I just like sometimes to see, we have, this person emails us from Mauritania. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The reach of our podcast. All right. Back in a moment with more of our weekly Q&A with Layla.